and welcome to Focus on the Delaware Valley. I'm Laura Lewis, and today with us from Gift of Life Donor Program, we have its president and CEO, Rick Haas, volunteer ambassador and heart recipient, Earl Jones, and donor dad, Gary Stever. Welcome, gentlemen.
Thanks for having us.
We are sitting down to record in mid-December of 24, which is a banner year for the program, 50 years. There's a great campaign going on right now called 50,000 for 50, and we're going to talk a little bit about that. But first, I think that Rick, we really need to start off with, what is the Gift of Life Donor Program?
Yeah, the Gift of Life Donor Program is an organization that connects donors with patients who are awaiting transplantation. Soon after a patient dies in the hospital, our team is there to work with families to offer them that opportunity to donate and create a legacy for their loved one by giving life to up to 8 people. And through tissue donation, be able to impact over 100 different individuals. And, you know, right now in the Delaware Valley, there's 5,000 patients waiting for an organ. And if we look at that nationally, we have over 100,000 people who are desperately waiting for that call. And when we talk with families, you know, obviously it's at some of the most difficult times in their life, soon after they've lost or have gotten the news that their loved one had died. But so many of them tell us that, you know, they were able to find a silver lining and that they were able to create that legacy and be able to really impact so many different people.
I thought that this was something that most of us decide before we're in this situation and that we decide it for ourselves. Is this something that falls to families, well, like the Stevers?
Yeah. You know, people are able to designate themselves as a donor. You can do that on your driver's license when you sign up, whether you're in Pennsylvania, New Jersey, or Delaware, the 3 states that we cover. You can make that wish known to your family. You can put it in an advance directive. But, you know, at the time somebody dies, we'll look first to those directions from the individual. And then in the absence of that gift document, we'll be talking to families about that decision. Irregardless, it's always good to make these decisions known and talk about them way before your families ever put into that crisis situation.
What can be donated? We always think about the heart, and Earl Jones is a heart recipient. Is it like 22 years now you've lived with your donor heart? We think about the heart. We think about livers. What can be donated?
Sure. I mean, most people associate donation with the major organs, and that's really what's in need. Transplantation is a modality and a cure for end-stage organ failure for hearts, livers, lungs, pancreas, kidneys. You know, most of the patients who are waiting for an organ are patients who are waiting for kidneys. Right now, you're able to be sustained through, you know, weekly dialysis treatments. There are over 500,000 patients in the United States with end-stage renal disease. You know, but they're a little bit lucky. They have that modality. Patients waiting for hearts and lungs and livers, you know, there isn't that stopgap treatment modality. And so patients die without that second chance at life. And so that's why it's so important to have that conversation. The other things that can be donated are things that we don't talk a lot about, but are used in everyday medical practice. Corneas to restore sight for those who have some type of corneal blindness. Skin for burn victims. And bone that is used in everyday in operating rooms across the United States for spinal fusions and sports-related injuries. There are over 500,000 tissue transplants that are performed annually. And that one gift from one donor family can impact over 100 different individuals.
Gary, did you realize what was going to happen? You're a donor dad. Would you like to share your story?
Sure. Before my relationship with the organ donor process became very personal, and that for me was about 2 years ago, I really had a general idea of what organ transplants were about and the availability of those. I have 5 kids, and when each of them got their licenses, we had a conversation about organ donation. I've always been an organ donor. And to Rick's point, it was really important to me that I had those conversations with the kids before we were ever in a crisis situation where we had to make a decision in a split second. But after those conversations, I really didn't pressure the kids to make a decision one way or the other. I felt it was pretty personal for each of them. But about 2 years ago, my son Dave was down in the city meeting some friends to go dancing. And the place where he was going had the dance floor up on the second floor of the building. Later that night, he was coming down the steps and he simply slipped and fell down the steps. And unfortunately, he had severe damage to the back of his neck when he fell and never regained consciousness after that. So I got a call at 1:30 on a Saturday morning from Jefferson Hospital and jumped in my car to go down. But to your point, the education that I received starting at that moment was impressive for me because when I got to the hospital, I certainly interacted initially with the clinical staff in the ICU and was impressed by the genuine compassion and care and respect that they showed in every conversation that I had with them. But what was even more impressive was at the point where it was determined that Dave was not going to survive his injuries, then there was this wonderful, seamless transition from the clinical staff in the ICU to the gift of life point of contact in the transplant coordinator who I met outside of the ICU in the visitor's room. It was only in that conversation that I began to understand just the breadth and depth of the programs that are coordinated by the Gift of Life program and the opportunities as a family that we would have to embrace the impact that Dave's gifts would have on the lives of other people. When I was in that waiting room, I remember looking down the hallway at the elevators. My family was all on their way. I really had no idea what I was going to say to them when they got there. And as Rick mentioned, you're in this critical moment where I was at the hospital down in Center City, and my family was on the highway coming from different directions to meet me. But what the nurses and the transplant coordinator had no way of knowing was that some years before in our family, we lost my youngest son, Christopher. So for us, this was a second loss. And I was really sitting in that moment, being acutely aware that I had no idea what I was going to say to begin to navigate my family out of this second event. And that's when I met the transplant coordinator. And in a very compassionate, gentle, supportive and respectful conversation, he educated me about what the process was going to entail and informed me, to your earlier point, that on Dave's driver's license, they learned that he had the organ donor designation on his license. So I was thrilled to hear about that. But it immediately gave me something to say to my family when they got off the elevator. Otherwise, I truly had no idea how I was going to comfort them after our previous loss, which wasn't all that long before. So when they arrived, we sat in the same visitor's room and had the conversation about the lives that would be saved because of Dave's gifts. It provides you a very positive, very tangible, healthy process and future to sink your teeth into, because otherwise you'd be left in a very dark place with just questions about how in the world this is happening again. So after everybody had arrived and had a chance to say their goodbyes to Dave, we all sat together as a family before we even left the hospital. And we were having conversations about the people who would get a phone call that night that would tell them that the miracle that they had been hoping for months or years was going to come true that day. In the process of the couple of years that I've been able to volunteer and meet people in the organization and have the privilege of meeting people like Earl, who are our transplant recipients, because Earl is an example of the kind of people that my family talk about every day. Every time we talk about Dave, we imagine and we talk about the people who are walking around and celebrating lives and vacations and careers and marriages and adventures, because the timing was right for Dave to provide them with a gift to continue living. And as a family, that takes you to a very different place of understanding that the legacy of our loved ones does not have to be limited to the years we have him here. Dave was 40 years old when he passed away. If he was not an organ donor, we would have had those 40 amazing years of memories that would have abruptly been followed by a void that we could only fill with grief, and the process would have been much more painful. Instead, he became this inspiration to continue the lives of other people. So in our conversations, Dave's legacy really will never really have an end because Dave saved three people's lives in the first 24 hours after he passed away. And if those three people saved three people and each of those people saved three, then the impact of that one decision by an organ donor continues on for generations. Our experience with the gift of life and everyone I've met from the transplant recipients to the staff of the gift of life has been overwhelming and positive for us. If it was not for them, I'm not sure where my family would be after a second loss for us.
Earl, you were someone who was waiting, and an act by a like family, like the Stevers, allowed you to see your children have children. What was it like for you waiting and then getting that call?
Well, the waiting, I was actually in the hospital at the time. I was at the very, I guess, end stage of organ heart failure. So it seemed like to me, I really didn't pay much attention to my mortality until after the fact. I really didn't realize how severely ill I was until after I received the transplant. And I could, do things that I was unable to do before then. And just listening to the medical professionals tell me about where I was prior to compared to where I was after. But before I get into that, I definitely want to say thanks to Gary. Folks like him, donor families in general, and one family specifically. I'm always honored to do these kind of outreach efforts and interviews and so forth. And I'm only able to do that because someone of his nature made the decision that affords me the ability to do this. So I'm always grateful to meet the donor families and personally thank them when I can. But my situation with regard to my own transplant journey, it started from the second I was born. I was born with a heart a defect that, for whatever reason, nobody knows. It wasn't actually detected until I was about 12 years old. I mean, so it really didn't affect me from doing anything I wanted to do, no physical limitations. And even from the time it was detected until I turned 30, I was still pretty active, no limitations. I was able to do everything I wanted to do. But when I hit that 30-year milestone, I suffered congestive heart failure, and things quickly went downhill from there. And I was fortunate enough, because of someone else's misfortune, to be able to get the gift that I have now. And I try to be the best guardian of this gift that I can. And again, it's always my honor and privilege to come and do these kind of things because people need to see what transplantation looks like on the other side as well. As Gary said, you make the decision to donate your loved one's organs, but sometimes you don't really know what happens afterwards. So I'm a living example of what the power of transplantation will be. And as you said, I've gotten a chance to see my children go to adulthood. I'm now a grandparent. I have one, my grandson just turned 12 last Tuesday. I have a granddaughter who's going to turn 14 at the end of this month. And they were roughly the same age as now that my kids were when I got my transplant. So everything, it's just been a blessing. It's really been a blessing.
What is the role of Gift of Life Donor Program? Rick, you are obviously a facilitator. You're there. So how do you push the process along? I mean, how does this work? Does the phone call come the same way to you and to a volunteer? Is that who's going to the hospital to make that horrible conversation?
No, we have a trained, dedicated team of over 300 individuals who work for the Gift of Life program. We cover Eastern Pennsylvania, Southern New Jersey, and the state of Delaware. In hospitals, there are about 126 acute care hospitals in that area who call Gift of Life at or near the time someone dies. And our coordinator will be dispatched to that hospital, to the intensive care unit, as Gary talked about, to really shepherd families through that discussion and that decision. And should the families say yes, or the patient have that donor designation, Gift of Life then begins to medically manage that donor to make sure that we can do different testing and diagnostics and begin the organ allocation process to be able to match that particular donor with all of those patients that are waiting for transplant. And then once all of that matching has been done, we'll coordinate the logistics to get the different transplant teams to the donor hospital to perform the surgical recovery. And then following the surgical recovery, most importantly, get those teams back to those different transplant centers so that they can implant that organ. So from that first call from the hospital until we interact with families, and then finally, that process can take a little bit of time. And so our team is kind of like the first responders of donation and transplant. We're 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, have people available so that we can meet family where they're at and begin to offer them that opportunity.
For the family, let's talk a little bit about this. There is no cost to the family who makes the donation.
No, there's no cost to families. All the coordination efforts and the medical management, all those things are borne by the Gift of Life donor program. But we later support families through a variety of different ways. Our conversation in the hospital will be the first of many. We're going to communicate with them throughout the donation process, follow up with them in terms of the people who they helped, not direct, because this will be a confidential decision to donate, as well as who the individual, but we'll share with them information about the recipients in terms of how they're doing. And we hire grief counselors who are available throughout that grief journey for families. We're able to do special programs throughout the year. And then finally, at the end of we just completed our legacy ceremonies, where we're able to honor donor families from the year before and bring them to a special ceremony that we can share with them transplant stories and recipients like Earl, who come to talk about what that decision that they made meant to them and their families. And so, our journey with Gary started a number of years ago, but he'll forever be a part of the Gift of Life family.
You cover the Pennsylvania, New Jersey, Delaware area. What about outside that region? Do hearts and livers and kidneys, do they come in and do ours go out? This is a national share. You're part of a large organization, aren't you?
Yeah, Gift of Life is one of 56 organ procurement organizations throughout the United States, each with a specific territory that they cover. And we're all linked through the Organ Procurement and Transplant Network. And so on a particular donor, we all access the same patient waiting list. That is, when you're a patient waiting for a transplant, you're available to get not only organs from your local organ procurement organization, but from patients who may have died in other parts of the country as well.
When that notification comes, do you help facilitate and work with the patients at that time too? Or do you get a notification that someone is coming in?
Yeah, when one of the there's 12 transplant centers in the Gift of Life area who have the expertise to do all the different organ transplants. And when a patient who's waiting in our area, that first call comes into Gift of Life, where we screen it from the other organ procurement organizations, and then work with the transplant center to arrange all the logistical travel that's necessary for them to get, maybe to New York or California or whatever part of the country that organ may be coming from, and work with those teams to make that happen. So we do both our local coordination, but also helping with the coordination of organs from other parts of the country.
And this is a terrible thing, but it is a matter of location, location, location for a lot of people waiting. We have people moving in to try and find an organ.
Well, there are many people who seek out the expertise in the Philadelphia area for transplant care. And so one of the things that we did a number of years ago is we built a Ronald McDonald-like house called Howie's House, which is a home away from home for patients who are awaiting transplant. And many people travel to Philadelphia for their care. And, patients wait for long periods of time, and many of them no places in which to stay. And so we provide really affordable housing, a home-cooked meal at night, and a place where they can actually talk about their transplant experience with other patients who are going through a similar experience.
I mentioned earlier that we're going to be talking about this campaign, the 50,450. Do you have any particular needs? Do some patients wait longer than other patients because of lack of matching donors? Are there communities that need more outreach?
Yeah, the 50 for 50,000 really comes to celebrate our 50th anniversary. So Gift of Life was founded in 1974. By two transplant surgeons who really didn't really know how to coordinate amongst all the different local hospitals the donations. And so they started this organization as a cooperative between the different transplant centers. And over those 50 years, we've learned a lot of things. We've improved immunosuppression. We've been able to improve surgical techniques, and the outcomes for patients awaiting transplant are terrific. But the one thing that we still rely on, as we did 50 years ago, is the kindness of a stranger. Somebody who say, yes, that this is a very unique area of medicine, right? We have the surgical and all the technology, but this is really about a neighbor helping a neighbor. And it doesn't start without that. And that hasn't changed over our 50 years. And so this campaign is really meant to inspire people to get registered by going to our website at donorsone.org and to make that decision to donate. That decision takes about 30 seconds of your time to do that, but that 30 seconds, as in Earl's case, means a lifetime for not only him, but his children, his family, and that ripple effect that Gary so eloquently talked about.
I was asking if there are any communities that really need to step up, or you need more, you know, more donors. But can anyone make the decision to donate?
People ask me that all the time in terms of, you know, how old. You won't want my organs if I'm, you know, too old. And you see on the driver's license registry, there's a step down progression in terms of when you're asked, do you want it on your license? People say no as you get older. And they don't recognize that, you know, the many organs really are resistant to age, particularly the liver. The oldest liver donor in the United States has been 97 years of age and successfully donated. It was a World War II veteran who donated his liver. He was in fantastic shape. And so we don't want you to rule yourself out and do that. We also know that, particularly in communities of color, there's a larger number and larger proportion of patients waiting primarily for kidney transplant. Over 60% of the patients waiting for a kidney are people of color. They have a higher incidence of hypertension, higher incidence of diabetes, and therefore a higher incidence of kidney failure. And so for the best matches, we know that obviously race and color do not play in a role in that matching process. But we know that if we can have more opportunities from donors of color, we'll have a better opportunity to match as well. So we're always looking to educate folks. And people don't always realize that it's really their next door neighbor who's going to dialysis three times a week for 4 to 5 hours a day. And, you know, those are the kind of patients that you're going to be helping.
I think the saddest thing is that, and you sent me, I've got it here. 17 each day, 17 people will die waiting for an organ transplant.
Yeah. Unfortunately, we're in a supply and demand imbalance, but it doesn't have to be. We know that right now, when we go to talk to families about this donation opportunity, and when there is not a donor card, and there's only a donor card or on the driver's license 30% of the time when we're talking to families. The other 70% of the time, this may be the first time that the family's hearing about it. And, you know, the approval or the authorization rate is somewhere in the 59-60%. And so we know we can do better. And normally when you ask people during a public opinion poll, when you're doing Gallup and things like that, it's almost 95% people say, yes, I support donation. But when you're making that decision now for somebody else, in a very emotional and critical time, we don't have that same success rate. And so the more we can get the word out and you sign up in advance, the better we'll be.
So 50,000 for 50. What you want us to do is go to your website, and when we get there, we complete the form. How does this work? And we are running out of time.
Yep, you hit the link and it'll take you right to a sign-up page. You don't have to wait to go to get your driver's license. This will keep you in a registry absent of your driver's license, and it's just that easy.
And when you have to make that terrible call to the emergency room, to the ICU, do you have that information then when you arrive to say your son, your husband, your wife had made this decision already?
Yeah, once we get to the hospital and before we meet with the family, we'll have access the information, whether it's through the state driver's license registry or through the online registry, so that we have that information. And it's many times very comforting for families. They may not have remembered, they may not have known that that the individual did that, but once you're able to share that with them, there's almost a sense of relief that they don't have to make that decision now, and that they're there to honor the decision that their loved one made, and to fulfill those last wishes.
Obviously, the best thing we can do is go to your website, donors1, that is the number one, donors1.org, and sign up as a donor. But what else can we do to support you?
Well, we always have volunteer opportunities, either through the Gift of Life Donor Program or every night at the Howie's house. We have a home-cooked meal. We call it Home-Cooked Heroes. So if you are a volunteer group, want to provide a meal for our families who are awaiting transplantation, we invite you to sign up, and you can do that at Howie's house.
Okay. And I'm going to guess at your website there are other opportunities for volunteer.
Absolutely.
And now I do hate to say it, but we need some parting words. Earl, would you like to go first?
Well, as I said, I always welcome these opportunities to come out or get the word out about the need and awareness for people to register as donors, because I'm here because of that. Please do take the time to educate yourself about the registration and donation process. Make decisions as right for you. It's definitely needed.
And Gary?
I think as a family, when I used to talk about this early on with my kids, the conversation always ended up landing with a question about why would we not want to do this? Why would we not want to continue the legacy of our loved ones and know that they had saved or improved the lives of other people? Why would we not want to provide other families with a way to be comforted and inspired by the lives that other people would live because of their loved ones?
And Rick.
Well, really, I just wanted to say thank you first to Earl and to Gary for really sharing their stories. And people choose to donate because of hearing about those personal testimonials and what it meant to them. And really to the Delaware Valley community. Gift of Life has been around for 50 years, and we have provided more organs and more transplants than any other community in the United States. And we know that that community is caring and giving and wants to help their neighbor. And so I want to, in advance, thank them for signing up to be an organ donor.
It's very easy. Go to their website, donors1, that's donors, the number one, .org. And there, of course, you'll learn about everything from how you can become one of those 50,000 for 50, how you can help make the unthinkable more bearable. It's all at donors1.org. More information about how to volunteer as well. And maybe it's at Howie's house, but you'll get it all there at their website, donors1.org. And so thank you. Thank you. to my guest today, Rick Haas. He is the president and CEO of the Gift of Life Donor Program, volunteer ambassador, heart recipient, Earl Jones, and donor dad, Gary Stever. Thank you all for doing this today.
My pleasure.
We appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.
And of course, again, go to donorsone.org for more information and to sign up for the $50,000 for 50. I'm Laura Lewis. This has been Focus on the Delaware Valley.